Hey.
Woo. Oh yeah, the static always gets.
Yeah, I was coming out of my speaker. So I was like, "Shit, did I forget to like?" Is there like a game running in the background?
Yeah, I don't know if it was extra loud or if my hearing's just super wonky today. But let us know in the chat. It's more abrasive than normal.
Yeah,
I don't. Welcome everyone to episode 20. On Bad Internet Friends podcast, where we decide to yammer on about starting a war game project.
Yeah, sort of. Mostly,
yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see if there's any new phases in the chat, or even if there are phases in the chat at all. It might be the Lone Rangers.
There's at least four stalkers. One might be you.
Okay, well, yeah, I have it like watching, so there's only three technically. But they do say you're, in order to be like successful, you have to be your own biggest fan, right?
Well, yeah, exactly.
So I am gonna like and subscribe after the episode.
Nice. Everyone should like and subscribe after the episode.
Yeah.
Or even during. Yeah.
You can even do it in advance. If you're just confident this is gonna be great, you should just hit that button that way. I got screwed on that on eBay once. It's like one of maybe three times ever I've like been screwed on eBay where I left feedback for something after getting like the box from the post office. And then it turned out it was like nothing anywhere near like what was advertised.
No.
Yeah. You couldn't like go back and undo it. So it's like, fuck. So now I wait until I'm back to at least like unpack the thing.
Yeah.
But you know, like usually I have like good eBay luck. People always talk about how they've been like cheated and scammed and stuff, but the only times I ever like get like cheated is when you have you ever had this where like you bid on something and you win it for like dirt cheap, and then suddenly like the auction is like closed out and you get like email saying, oh, there was an error in the listing or something. You don't get it because you got your thing for like $1 and it was supposed to be worth like $100.
Oh yes.
Like, oh okay. And then they relisted like identically like half an hour later.
I haven't ever been burned, but I did buy something that, you know, wasn't guaranteed to work, and I think it was guaranteed not to work, honestly.
Yeah, if there's like any questions at all, especially for electronics, you should just assume it's the worst possible. I have gotten some gadgets that didn't work, but I couldn't tell all the time if it, because it was like retro computer stuff. So there's a 50% chance it's actually just because your hardware is shit. And a 50% chance that, you know, the thing you paid for was broken. So I didn't even leave feedback on those. I'm like such a dork because like it's the same if you go out to eat. Like if there's any of those like survey cards or something, like you have to literally like pour my food on the floor for me to give you less than a 5. And even then, like, if it looked like an accident and you still like get it, like I'll still give you a 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in the day, you had to say you have to earn your 5 stars. And now we say you have to earn your 4 or below.
Well, part of it was when I was working at when I was being a supervisor, because I realized, and I'm sure it's the same everywhere else, basically, as far as like your pay or bonuses or whatever, the only thing that counts is a 5. Like if a customer gives you a 4, they may as well give you a 0. And I'm sure it's the same for like everywhere else. So now unless the person is like, and then it's like, you know, like the waiter brings your food and the food isn't that good, but like your waiter didn't like cook it. You know, that's like some asshole back in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, is it even worth?
Poor lad just sitting back there sweating.
Yeah, probably sweating in the food, you know. That's why it's so fucking salt all the time when you buy restaurant food.
So we're going to say hello to a new face before we begin. Mariga. Hello. Hey.
Oh.
Small Batch Miniatures Games. Whoa. Oh, two new faces.
Two new faces. That is 100% more, I think, than the regular number of faces.
Yes. It's been a long time since we've had new faces.
Yeah.
I feel pressure now. For sure.
I know. No. They're all like fired up, like, oh my god, we're gonna learn like amazing insights about like hobby gaming, and it's just gonna be like dumb bullshit.
Well, maybe they've listened to us before though, they just never made it on live, so they know what to expect.
Well, this is true. That's what we're gonna tell ourselves. So I guess our topic was, and so normally just for the new faces, now I'm beginning self-conscious. You have to like explain everything. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, so the way this works is that we have cameras that point to our faces and then we talk into them, and that's how it works. So if you get confused, you can, you know, slow down and rewind a little bit and see it again. The topic's gonna be a little freehand because Dave isn't feeling super well. So we're just going to kind of, but we're going to sort of circle around like starting new projects and how that kind of goes on. I actually got to thinking right before we like hit the button. I was going to ask you, like, if somebody asks, you know, invites you to, because you started playing Mordheim recently, right?
Last fall, yeah. So, I mean, okay. I played it when it came out, and then I joined a league last fall.
Yeah. So, now, did you already have stuff sitting around that was, like, Mordheim suitable? You know, like, some goblins and dudes with swords and stuff? Or did you have to, like, go dig around, or did you end up buying, like, new minis for it?
Well, I was able to jump in at the exact point in time of Warhammer history where the market was saturated, especially on eBay, but the it was a low demand. So Age of Sigmar had come out, 7th edition Warhammer 40K was out, you know, so miniatures were very cheap to grab. So I just kind of grabbed a spattering of everything.
Yeah. So you had stuff sitting around in boxes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was right. Good.
So let's say you didn't have that. Like you get invited to play Mordheim and you don't have any stuff sitting around. Maybe you only play 40K Battletech, so you can't really bring your like Warhammer mechs to a Mordheim game, I'm told. Mm-hmm. Like, what's like the barrier for you to like go out and buy new stuff to play a specific game? Like,
I think it's acceptance overall. I mean, especially if you've never really played a game with other people before, and you think you have to buy the official stuff, and then now if you're going Mordheim, if you're buying official stuff, you're dooming yourself, really.
Yeah. But, you know, like, because I think for me, it's like, there's like a mental barrier around like $50. Like, if $50 will get me at least like kind of started, then I'm pretty likely to like jump into something. Because then it's like, okay, if nothing else, I'll have like fun with the minis. Maybe they'll be useful something else. But if the buy-in is like, you know, $300 to build, I don't know how much. I think you can build like a 40K army for $300 if you're like pretty judicious with like eBay and some of those box sets.
Not sure. Yeah, I mean,
they
kind of make it tricky.
Yeah, well, it's funny because like sometimes the big like army boxes don't have like bananas good value, but then you realize that it's on like 600 points or something.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, there's like a, and I don't know what it is for people. Maybe it's also just because I played like so much 15 millimeter sci-fi where $50 will like basically just, like that's all you're going to spend, you know? Mm-hmm. But it feels like that's kind of like, if it's too much past that, then I start like really, really asking. What really like trips me up for something is if I don't have any terrain that's suitable and I know the person doesn't either. Because like the train I got is like sci-fi buildings and like some like nature stuff and some ruins and stuff. So, and that works for like 90% of things I want to play. So if it's something that requires like terrain that I don't have, then there's a pretty good chance that that is going to be terrain that is like only for that specific thing. It's like the same reason I didn't really jump on to War Machine much because all the minis were like really, really cool. And like they're kind of spendy, but not like unforgivably so, not in comparison. They were fine for like 20 years, but they're like never going to see use outside of playing War Machine. And the people I knew who played War Machine they wanted to play War Machine. And then it turned out what they wanted was somebody else to buy some War Machine army so they could play War Machine.
Yeah, exactly.
so we ended up not playing it. But I was looking at it back when it was like big and. Like, the minis are, like, so specific, they're hard to, like, get to show up somewhere else, you know? Like,
if you buy especially back then, yeah.
Yeah, it was, like, very, very specific, and there wasn't any. Like, if you buy some, you know, like, if you get into Frostgrave, you buy a couple of those boxes, and then you decide you don't really want to play Frostgrave. But there's, like, a bunch of other fantasy games you can play with those same dudes.
Mm-hmm. So, Peachy's favorite, Five Leagues from the Borderlands, perhaps.
Yeah, that is... We have joked before that the Frostgrave and Stargrave boxes are basically the official five parsecs and five leagues box sets. So, you know. But yeah, it's like, I think that's kind of, because terrain ends up being, like, minis are easy to, like, store and stuff, right? Like, usually, you know. But terrain, like, eats up a ton of space. Often you have to build it, and buying terrain is, like, expensive. Like, so that's, like, the bigger barrier of entry compared to minis, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Well, The only reason I ever got into minis is because someone else did all the legwork. Like, I don't know how I would have on my own. Well, I collected miniatures, but I didn't know what to do with them. Like, they're just role-playing miniatures. Yeah. I just looked at them. I thought they were cool.
Yeah. Well, when I was living in Portland, I ran into, like, there were a bunch of people who were mostly RPG folks. They had played, like, a little bit of board games, a little bit of Magic the Gathering, but they either had never played Warhammer or anything like it, or they really didn't know, like, what miniatures gaming was. But they were all, like, happy to play, but they were, except for like one person, they were all people who had like no interest in building or painting or collecting minis. So it was basically more like a board game where it's like, okay, come over to my place, I'll set it up, we'll play, you know, I got, you know, spare like two World War II armies or whatever, and we would just play. And for them it was more like a it was more like a board game thing essentially, like you know, like some of them keyed into there's one guy I played Stargrunt with a lot, and he kind of got into the idea of like creating scenarios and stuff. But again, that was more on that side of things where we would agree, like, okay, let's try, like, you know, you have an APC and a bunch of dudes, and I have a couple sniper, you know, like just very simple. But like he keyed into that part real easy. But I don't think he would ever have like gone out and like bought an army or anything. There's like one dude I played with who like said like, oh yeah, he would kind of wanted to get some minis, and then he realized that they don't come painted. So there's like a high, I've often said, I think we've talked about this before too, there's a lot of people out there who like would be into miniatures gaming, but they end up not, either because they think it's really expensive, because they think it has to be like a giant like 40k army, or because they are really intimidated by like painting, you know, 1,000 fucking dudes, or even like building a bunch of dudes. Like, I remember getting the, what was it called? Betrayal at Kalth or whatever, the like boxed board game they did. It was a cool board game, but like everyone was just buying the box to get the Space Marines. And I remember thinking, like, if you're a board gamer buying this thing, you're looking at like a whole, I forget how many, like 30 different Space Marines, all of which are like 7 pieces each, and you have to glue it all together before you can even play the game. Like, that's a huge barrier of entry if you're coming from like a board game mentality where you just take the stuff out of the box. Like, there's board gamers that like paint their dudes, but those are like one piece. You're not like assembling like multi-pose figures and stuff. Which, you know, like a lot of these, like, I hear all of these, like, low figure count warband games are big right now. That's what I've seen on the internet.
I'm going to type something in so just so I can remember. Future show topic, best and worst starters.
Oh, that was a great one.
Because I was just thinking about the Robotech RPT Tactics starter as
one of
the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah, I watched you, like, assemble some stuff, and it was like pretty gnarly. I heard, like, was it the Centrati ones weren't too bad?
No, not
the other way around. Oh, okay. So, but you also need like a billion of those.
The Veritex were literal mini kits, mini model kits.
Yeah,
every piece was in two pieces. So, if you want the lower forearm, you got to join those two pieces together and put the hand in there, glued to the elbow, which goes into the upper arm, which goes into the shoulder, which goes into the torso, which is a couple pieces. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, like half the pieces are like literal slivers of plastic. And there's no guarantee. There's basically a guarantee that it will not all go together smoothly. Mm-hmm. I've always heard the story that it was something with the license, that they technically didn't get a license to make miniatures. They get a license to make like model kits or something. But I've never been able to tell if that was true.
Yeah, because the Zentradi weren't like that. So we don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There is those. What is the company? Kits Logic.
You
sent me a couple of those. Those are really cool. They're resin, so you have to be like a little gentle with them, but they're like awesome. And they're not expensive. I think they were like $10 a pop or something.
I think 20.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I remember they were like not expensive for like a bespoke little branded stuff. Like they're
well priced. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were like because you only need like a couple of them.
I just want to touch base. DM Riga said they really love the concept of War Machine, but the same boat never got into it. And I think it lacked a really good starter, didn't it, for a while?
Yeah, I think there were a couple of boxes, but part of it, too, was it was a little hard to... Maybe I was just stupid, but it was a little hard to like figure out exactly what you're supposed to have. Like, you needed one of the big robots, you needed a wizard, and then you needed some dudes. But it's kind of hard to tell if you needed like multiple squads of dudes and one big robot, or if you needed multiple robots, or like, it was also like super like tournament oriented. So it always had that feeling of like, you have to get like a very specific size and type of army to like play. Cause it was very like,
you're supposed to 100% wrong answers.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too, is like, you buy a bunch of stuff, then you realize that your stuff sucks ass. Like, not even you picked an army, you didn't like, you know, like everyone has done, like, you, like, I remember wanting to play Blood Angels in 40K because that's what was on the box. And then I realized I didn't care about Blood Angels at all and didn't want to play them. But that's like one thing, is that something different entirely if you realize that you just hate how like that army plays and now you have the wrong. So, yeah, it's, I guess back in the day, because I know they had a whole thing for, like, organized, they had, like, people that were supposed to, like, teach you in the stores and stuff. That only helps you if you live near a store, and if you are playing, you know, like, if you live near a store that has one of those dudes, and that dude is not, like, a raging asshole. If you're, like, two or three guys who are just looking to order some stuff online and start the game, then it becomes a little more difficult. Those are all things you can, like, solve, you know, having better onboarding resources. There was somebody who said the other day, or a while ago, I'm in a loop, that one of the things that was really, like, missing in a lot of books is showing you, like, what a starter, like, a basic starter army should look like. Because then you can see up front, like, how much stuff you're supposed to be getting, dusting off the shelf, right?
Yeah. Or the ones that provide, like, a list. It's like, okay, this is our rule book. And this is what you should start with. You should have this army, and this is this many points, and this is what it can do. And you should play against this army, because this army is different in this way, and it's this many points, and they can do different things that are different from the other one, and you learn how to work together.
Beat each other. It's one of those things that's, like, easy to, like, forget, because, you know, it's self-evident. If you've, like, played the game for a while, or you've worked with it, or whatever, you've been promoting it, or you wrote it, or whatever the case, like, that stuff is all, like, internalized, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I would almost bet you could probably do this as, like, a test. Like, the lamest game show ever. If you took, like, a bunch of Warhammer guys and put a whole bunch of minis on the table and told them, to eyeball, it would basically be, like, Price is Right. You have to pick up 1,000 points of guys, and whoever gets closest to 1,000 points wins, right?
Oh,
they could probably do that like perfectly, or at least like get really close. But if you're brand new, you don't really have that sense of like how this stuff all like. If I go out and buy like one Rhino and one squad of Space Marines, is that like a lot? I don't know. Like literally, it might be, but it probably isn't. I feel like I need more dudes. Zeron has a. Do you want to pop up his comment real quick?
Oh yeah, definitely. That's also a new face, I believe. Hello, Zeron.
Hey.
I definitely like games that have a starter box, even if I don't get them, just so I have that example force to get an idea of what to expect. Yeah, exactly. And then DM Reg also touched on that.
I think there's kind of two like types of starter boxes I've seen, because I've seen starter boxes that are like that, where they're supposed to be like either a playable little army or at least like a core that you can build around. And I've definitely also seen starter boxes that were just like some random shit they probably had in the warehouse and were trying to shift. Yeah. So it doesn't fit together at all. I've seen both of those for 40K over the years. Which, you know, sometimes just getting a random box of minis is fun too. But yeah, like, and it's such an easy, like I said, it's such an easy thing to forget. Because when this was in release to Rokan, the guy was saying, and it's like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. Why isn't that a thing? Like, the game has a points values and you're supposed to build an army. So, like, put an army in there. So it's definitely something that you can do more with. One of the things I want to do is put together, like, a little 100-point or whatever army list for each of the armies in the book, just so there's, like... Because they always used to have that in, like, the old Codex books, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it was, like, in the back, there would be... Sometimes it would be even, like, a whole thing where a guy would talk about, like, how he assembled it. And,
And, like, the 4th edition Undead book, that's the only army book I ever really read thoroughly. And it had like battles that, you know, people actually fought with using the miniatures, like Empire versus Undead. And they gave the force lists and, you know, you could build both sides and you could recreate that battle too. Oh, yeah. That was amazing. Like, well, I don't have any of those miniatures, but, you know, it's a really cool idea.
There's a flip side to that. I forget if it's from this original Space Wolf Codex or something where they had a battle report in there, but it was actually from, like, the previous edition of 40K. It was the weirdest thing because it was referencing, like, a bunch of rules and stuff that didn't exist anymore. I guess they just had, like, lying around. They were looking to make up, like, an extra 5 pages in the Codex or something.
Oh. Awesome.
Yeah. But it is a... I feel it's also... It varies a little bit because if it's a game, like a lot of, especially if it's like a commercial game, you're almost always going to be obviously expected to use like the correct and proper miniatures. But I wonder if there's almost like a reverse thing when it comes to like generic or like agnostic miniature rules. Because a lot of times with that crowd, you get people who have like very specific things they want to be able to use. So it's like, it doesn't matter that the book says that I should start with this. What I want is to use my like mechanized hover tanks, like platoon or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I have 3 hover tanks and 30 infantry and a giant robot, and I want to use all of that. So it's like, it's kind of the opposite problem of where you have to kind of like anticipate what people are going to want to use in the game, right?
Yeah. Well, there's that. I can't remember which rule book I read that in last, but there was like a time where it was very fashionable to say you should just grab 2 forces you like the look of and then, you know, agree with your opponent. Does it look like these guys could beat one another? You know,
oh, yeah.
I think I stand a chance against you. And it turns out when you play the rules, it's like nothing close.
It's not close. Yeah, it can, especially if you don't like understand, like if you take 2 armies where like, you know, like my army happens to have a bunch of missile launchers and we're playing a game where missile launchers are like completely overpowered, you know, so you might run into, or you're trying to like build something like in a game where you can like stat up your own dudes, but you don't really know like what the baselines are. So you end up completely breaking the game because it turns out like having a dude with like that much armor is just like impossible, or it's supposed to be reserved for like, you know. Yeah, we've definitely had back in the day, there was this game called, I think, Tactical Strike. It's one of those games that exist on the internet for like half a year. I think they got sued by Games Workshop for producing like knockoff replacement partners or something.
Oh, yeah.
So this was back before like you could kind of get away with that. But it had this thing where you could like design stats for your stuff. So a friend of mine decided he has seen some movie and he wants to make like the characters from that movie. So he just gave them all like the highest stats you could. And that completely broke the game because they just like the game was just not intended to like to work that way.
There's a lot of games though that are the box set is 2 forces. One's a horde and one's elite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, I'm kind of sick of the horde versus elite, you know, like,
oh,
and the elite is always like, if you go into like the actual game rather than just the starter game, like the points value of the elite army is like way higher than the horde army. The horde army never had a chance. You have to work so hard to build this stupid army that's never going to have a chance.
Yeah. You start off with a bunch of like goon monsters that like, it turns out you need like 100 of them for it to make a difference.
Yeah.
Raga saying one page rules is fantastic about generic minis. They have the whole line, but they accept and encourage proxies from everywhere. Mm. So yeah. Well, so that's the other part, right? Like some of that is obviously with OPR, that's like built into like how the game works. But it's also a thing where depending on the people you're playing with, because I played back when I played 40K, I played with people who were like very keen on like everything had to be like official minis, and I played with dudes who like really didn't give a shit. Like, you know, and I played, you know, when we were really broke, I played the games with the Coke can dreadnoughts and stuff like that. But that's probably a step too far for most people. but you know, you like
2 thick arms, 2 thick legs.
I knew a guy who made a orc dreadnought out of like a roll of toilet paper that he painted in like black with orc runes, and then he glued like arms and legs on it. And like at a distance it looked like a dreadnought, but when she looked close it was like it looked terrible because it's like
The old 5 feet rule.
It looked fine from the other side of the table. When you look close you realize it was like it was just like a black tube with like Eldar weapons glued onto it. It looked terrible. So but it only had to work a little bit. But you know, like if you have, I was going to use an example, then I realized it was an example from a game that nobody's played for like 20 years. I don't even, But if you had, back in the day, I guess, if you had like a bunch of like Imperial Guard minis sitting around and somebody asked you to play like a Void with them, that's a game people play still, right?
Oh, yeah. Super popular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Flying off the shelves. That's why you can't buy it anyway. You know, like you can push your dudes into service, right? Like when I got taught a friend to play Stargrunt, our first battles were like a box of Cadian shock troops that I had bought and then a bunch of his old like Warzone minis, and that worked fine.
Yeah, if you're not afraid to proxy, you can do so much in life.
Yeah, or like get close enough, right? That's one of the benefits of like 15 millimeter is that there usually aren't official rules, so like what it is in your head is basically like whatever it needs to be.
You can't WYSIWYG if you can't see it properly.
Yeah, this is true too. If the dude is 15 millimeter and he's over there, I'm going to say he has a fucking sword. What are you going
to
do? Yeah. What are you going to do about it?
Zeron was saying they lost more than one minis game because they wanted to WYSIWYG, basically. And it was not optimal.
There's like the other side to that too of like forgetting like who has what gun.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes what you see is what you get is like easier because, or you're playing, there was a guy I used to play with when I was in high school who had this thing of like, it was always like pretty hazy, like which character had which weapon. And when he checked the army list, it always turned out that it was like the right guy who had it. Like, oh, that dude is the one with the extra special grenade or whatever, who happens to be like in the right position. Funny how that works. So like stuff like that gave a lot more appreciation for what you see is what you get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been confused in Mordheim too. Like when people proxy things, it's like, this is my Gashapon from Japan. It's like, okay, but I don't remember anything about these guys. I'm like, I'll fight him, but I don't know what he is or what he's going to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Turns out he's a murderer.
Right?
Damn murderer.
The only game we were ever 100%, which is what you get, was Blood Bowl. Now, you could bring, like, a Warhammer guy that was converted, but it still had to be the right guy. Like, some of my Skaven were actually, like, I think they were actually Mordheim Skaven that lost their swords. So it was the best, easiest way to get some plastic Skaven. But, like, that was, for whatever reason, that was just the game. Maybe it was because we only needed, like, 12 guys. But that had to be, like, exact. Anything else, we would let you get away with murder. Although we played so many, like, tournament games at the time that most people, like, had stuff anyway that was, like, passable. Like, if you're going to be clever, you had conversions or, you know, some old Road Trader minis back when you could still order them. But, but yeah, so it was just kind of a different vibe. But I guess nowadays when I look online, like, you almost get, like, two different groups because you get, like, a lot of the, like, 40K players don't convert very much at all. And I really don't see, for some of the other games that are kind of, like, big right now, I don't see people really converting very much at all. And then you have, like, the Inquisitor 28 guys and stuff who... where, like, everything is converted, like, absolutely not. It's almost like nothing is allowed to be, like, off the shelf. Like, even if you buy, like, a special mini, you have to, like, kibash it up a little bit.
You lose street cred if you just use off the shelf.
Yeah, yeah. Because then there's another guy who has the exact same mini, right?
Yeah. I just wanted to shout out Mini Wormut for a sec. He's doing a great 5 Parsecs campaign on YouTube right now, so definitely check that out. He's running... He's got, like, a lot of friends in the group chat, so he's running, like, two crews. And the people are making kind of decisions for what's going to happen with the crews, and then he plays them out on them. That's really awesome. Good.
Yeah. Yes, I think we'd come up with the term social solo for that, where you play a solo game, but it's not really, like, you're not really alone, whether it's, like, sharing it on a blog or doing something like that, where it's, like, multiple people feeding into the same game, which is really cool. It's, like, it's one of those things that... Like, honestly, I never, like, anticipated. Like, I don't have, like, I'm not, like, a visionary guy when it comes to, like, people figuring out, like, unusual ways of playing the game. Like, they surprise me as much as anyone else. So, like, some of the stuff that people have come up with is, like, wow, yeah, that's really cool. You should totally do that. I definitely plan for you to do just that thing.
It is as I have foreseen, yes.
Yeah, see, a better designer than I would insist that it was, like, the plan all along. There was a thing in, I think Doom 2 had a secret thing in a level where it took something like 25 years for somebody to figure it out. And only through, like, the most it was very obviously like exploiting like a glitch to like get the secret to finally like trigger so you could complete the level with 100% secrets. And when somebody like mentioned it to like John Romero on Twitter, he pretended, he was basically pretty obviously pretending that, oh yeah, that's what we had planned all along. Like, no, you didn't. That was bullshit. Now that's one of the things that's becomes interesting with like people picking there, because I've seen a lot of people picking out their first like 5 parsecs cruise, and like you can tell, like there's obviously people who are just kind of looking to get like some minis. Like, I need 6 dudes and I need to be able to tell them apart. And other than that, it doesn't really matter that much. But a lot of people, like, I don't know if people are doing the thing where they like pick the minis and then they like kind of keep rolling until they get a crew that fits them, or if they like roll the crew and then they go like kit bash something or get minis that kind of fits, because a lot of them look like very, very particular.
Yeah, for me it was a little A, a little B. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some guys I definitely want to see, so I'll make it, you know, I'll make it work. After I roll up the crew, I'll decide, okay, these guys match these ones the best, and the other ones you're like, oh, okay, maybe I'll just look through my collection now, drag something out of the lead pile.
I mean, you can get like a pretty big amount of leeway. You know, you got 2 guys with pistols, you got 1 dude with a big gun, you got 1 dude, you know, who just looks kind of weird. So if, when you get a weird character, he can just be that one.
Now, if he had written in the rules that you must WYSIWYG, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, that, see, that's the kind of thing where once you have like enough fans that are rabid and manic enough, because then you start doing complete bullshit, like come up with aliens that nobody has minis for. Like in the next expansion, I think it put in like living crystal dudes and plant people.
Oh yeah, I love those guys. Yeah.
So, which like there's no minis for. But that was also one of the things, because I remember we had talked about it with like the editing guy when Parsecs was being like ironed out, about like how it was fine, like that some of the options, because this is something I really wanted, was that there should be some options in the book that you're kind of like meant to go and like build a mini for or convert something for. Because, you know, like a lot of them for Parsecs are like, you know, space dudes with space guns, and for Leagues it's like dudes with swords. Like, everyone has lots of stuff for that. But there should be a few things that you have to kind of like go out of the box a little bit. Like, you know, like everyone bought up. I like to think that like the Frostgrave guys saw like an increase in the sale of like boxes of gnolls, because that was the only way of getting posable figures with like canine like features.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's cool that there's something you kind of like have to go out and like find something for, build something for, because it makes it more interesting. You have a mini that is now like uniquely yours, like you built it, and then it dies like in the first battle, because that's
how
spend like, I sometimes worry, like I see some of these dudes who are like building up and converting like a whole squad of guys and painting them and come up with names and backstories and all this stuff, and then like those guys might die like literally their first outing.
Or worse, you know? Get the character event where they change their appearance.
Thanks,
Ivan. Yeah. Just finish this guy. Now he has to look completely different.
Well, yeah, that one is in there like specifically for the purpose of people who like do take like what you see is what you get, like seriously, you know. Like, I never expect, in my mind, I assume people were not gonna like hack up models when they get like a different gun or something. I'm sure there are people who do that, but that was never like the intent. But I did sort of assume that people would like make changes to their models like while they're playing. Based on like what is happening. But I don't know if that's like a thing a lot of people do.
I tend to just kind of equip the characters based on their miniature. So if they have like a shotgun, I'm like, well, that's reasonably a shotgun, or maybe even some sort of blaster or something. But I'm not going to give them like a pistol or a hyper pulse rifle or whatever.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing. I'm making it like stick to the, you know, like if you have one guy with a big ass gun, 2 guys with rifles, and 2 guys with like swords, that's sort of like determines who gets what. Like, okay, I guess I can only have 1 big-ass gun. And if I find, like, a plasma rifle, it has to be one of these 2 guys. So it's like, it also, like, helps not get, like, I have 100% when doing playtesting, like, gotten mixed up of, like, okay, the guy that I thought had a shotgun only has, like, a pistol that's out of ammo. So you could definitely, like, run into issues with that.
Oh, we do have a 5 parsecs question.
Oh, yeah.
DM Riga was asking, if people want their folks to live longer, just give them one luck to begin with, make it more high fantasy.
Yeah, you can absolutely do that. You can also just like jack up like the toughness of everyone by like 1 point. Some people feel that like 2 and 3 toughness to start is a little too low. Like the thing is, because the game engine is like so simple, like if you stripped out like the explanations, I think the core combat rules probably fits in like 2 pages. There's really not much there, which makes it like really easy to hack and mug around with. Like I have tested it out where everyone like can survive one hit automatically, and that worked fine. I haven't put that in the book anywhere because it ran into some other issues that required different rules to deal with. But yeah, you can like one thing. This comes up a lot when people are asking, like, "Oh, I want to play the game with like 12 of my friends at a convention. Can I just give them like a quarter of a character each?" Like you can, but when like one guy dies and that happens real easy, he's gonna like be sitting it out. So you might want to give them like a couple of guys or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like that's. You know, you can, it's meant to be like pretty adaptable. People will, there's been like some bizarre, weird, like modifications people have done too. So you probably can't break it.
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword, painted goblins till tea, then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie, swapped dragons for deadlines, your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done, and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head, but you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'll never forget the early days of the 5 Parsecs Facebook group where someone was asking about making rules for interrogating prisoners.
Oh, dear.
And like torture and stuff. It's like, that's definitely not in the rules, man. I mean,
oh, yeah. That one you're on your own for. Like, come on, man.
we're not doing that here.
Yeah, like let's be it's not like grimdark like for a reason. We're not gonna have the table for like depending on which thumbnail you're pulling out. Like good grief, man. There was one email I got, and the guy was not like weird, but he was asking like, well, he was playing Weasel Tech, and he was asking like, well, I have two characters who are now like in love with each other, because that's, you know, a thing that can happen in Weasel Tech. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they're both straight. And I was like, I don't know. You're about to find out. Like, you decide, man. You know?
Yeah.
Like it's anime. It could be whatever you want to. It's your story. It's kind of something. I had this, I'll do this, like, this will be the last thing I do. Like, if I ever have, like, a falling out with Modiphius or something, you will all get this expansion. It'll be a fan expansion, and it'll detail all the species in the 5 Parsec universe, and it'll have, like, they'll be cross-referenced in, like, a big grid, and it'll tell you which ones can, like, canonically, like, fuck each other and which ones can't.
This is fatal.
Yeah. Just to give people like, because this is the kind of thing like when you, the more you step into like the RPG aspect of things, the more people like want weird. Like I got an email once, somebody asking like the laser bolts, does Unity Troopers use like a specific color of like laser weapons? Like the bolts they shoot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like in Star Wars, like you can tell the difference between if the rebels or the bad guys, depending on their lasers. So, you know, like you'll get, people want like answers to that kind of stuff.
So what is the answer then?
I do not remember. See, that's the problem. Once you give the answer, that's fucking canonical. And like somebody's gonna.
They got screenshotted or it's lost forever.
Yeah. It may be lost forever. Unless that dude wrote, maybe he forgot. He moved on. He's playing Frostgrave now because it's cooler. or Stargrave. But, you know. Well, and it's also, like, especially with, like, canon, because there's, like, last time I, like, polled it before I left Facebook. The answer was it was like a third of the players or something like that who like took the setting and like unified space and all that like very seriously. And they wanted to know more about it. They want to have the characters like be correct in there. And there was like a third of them who like basically were playing like Star Trek or 40K or something else or just wanted to make their own. A lot who did like Star Wars stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you had like another group, about a third, who were like kind of doing a little bit of both. So they would have like Star Wars characters and then they will still have like the species from the book or something. Like with like their own, it's like a mishmash of stuff. So you have to be like, tread kind of carefully with like how much you nail down because it's not really, it's meant to be kind of open-ended.
Yeah, until fourth edition comes out, where everything needs to be nailed down tight because it is all WYSIWYG, and Modiphius is releasing plastic kits.
Yeah. So there
you need to buy a lot of them.
I don't know if I can. Pretty sure I can't show pictures, but there are kits coming for some of the like main types. So there will be. Now I don't. These things take like forever to build, but I know that like some of the common enemy types, there'll be some crew characters, which would be cool.
But people keep asking me when Planetfall is coming out. I'm like, it's Modiphius time, so maybe next year or something.
Tactics was a full year from me handing over the final version until like it came out. So shit, it just takes a while. Like people. People forget that, like, the minis gaming part is, like, one small corner of their operation. And, like, my part of that is, like, a corner of that corner of the operation. So stuff just takes a while. Plus, there's, like, one specific guy that, like, does most of the editing for me. He's super awesome. Like, if you can find anything in any of these fucking books, it's because of that dude, Rich. So you want that guy laying it out. Because he can turn my, like, complete nonsense into like readable usable books.
It's better than family.
It's funny how many people bring up, like, I think Peachy has mentioned this like 12 times on his channel, that the book is color coded, which is not something I was smart enough to come up with. That was like something that they figured out. So if you like stuff like that, you want the same guy like handling it. But yeah, so there will be real minis.
Okay. Do you have any other information? Like, are they going to be metal or plastic or 3D printed and sent out or
the
steelcast?
Metal, probably not. I don't even know if they do metal at all. The conversation was basically between like resin and plastic. And I think it mostly depends on like the numbers of like how many are you expecting to sell? Because my very limited understanding is that plastic requires a lot more upfront cost. To get going, and then the per sprue or per mini cost is pretty low, whereas resin is like very much cheaper to get going, but over the long run. So if you're looking at selling like, you know, some hundreds, you kind of can't do plastic if you're looking into it. I don't know how many like War Games Atlantic sell, because they do plastic sets for like some pretty obscure stuff, but it must make sense for them.
Yeah, they did this Quar's War of all things. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's so, like, okay numbers. Like, I see it pop up all kinds of places, but I don't see it, like, you know, like, it's still obscure, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's possible that, like, the break-even point is fairly low, and for a lot of companies, that's just not worth pursuing. Like, unless you can actually turn a profit on it, you know, it's hard to get people to, like, sign off on that. But yeah, as far as I know, they have no interest in doing, like, metal.
It does seem like a good plastic kit, you know, print itself money, basically.
Yeah,
with the longevity of it all.
I have definitely like seen people online say that they just, if there aren't plastic figures, they don't want to, like, they don't buy resin or metal. So yeah,
and the steel cast is like the compromise. It's like not as expensive as plastics, but it has a little bit better production time and quality than resin, though not necessarily, you know, as quality of a miniature, and you get a nice chunk of plastic.
I feel like resin is, at least last I bought, I feel like resin still has like sharper quality, or maybe it's easier to work with. I'm not sure. The thing that always kills me with resin minis is I'm always like terrified of breaking them. And I know usually they're like pretty durable. It's not like, it's not really that much. You can drop them on, and I have carpet anyway, so it's not like it would be an issue. But yeah, I just like really worried about them. Like the only thing I felt really comfortable with in resin was like those like flames when Battlefront used to do their tanks. Like, the hull would be resin. It's just like a block, and then all the pieces are like turrets and stuff were metal, or the barrels, which are.
I actually like those kits. A lot of people hated them, but I loved it. I'm like, I like it that it's not all metal. I like the hull is plastic or resin.
Yeah, it worked super well. Like, I mean, I guess nowadays even they're doing plastic kits. So.
Yeah, they still do, though, the resin metal kits.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, yeah, if it's going to be, like, an Italian tank that, you know, like a P90 / whatever.
Yeah, some of that stuff. Like, nobody
yeah, that would never actually existed, and they're not going to sell very many of them. They'll just do a resin run and be done with it.
Mm-hmm. Zeron says, the only minis that have truly disappointed was my Victrix Roman's Super Fragile. Yeah, see, that's what I always worried about. And especially for those, I assume those are 28s.
Yeah, with their little pilums.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Every once a year, I look at, like, medieval or ancient era gaming. And it's like, you know what? That would be really awesome. And then I look at, like, a battalion of dudes with spears that are all fucking bent in every which direction. Half of them are broken. Yeah. It's like, no, that sucks fucking ass. So Torben, who is not here tonight, actually, was talking about, I think he was trying to get into a Baron's War, I think it's called, which is, like, from a cursory look, it looks like it's kind of Lord of the Rings for medievals, but that's fine. That's kind of, like, the vibe I was after. But I was definitely looking at just getting some, like, single-piece, like, metal figures that are, like, clutching their axes and swords in very, like, robust ways. So, actually, it's funny you mentioned Victrix because I have a bunch of their like 12mm plastic World War II, and I don't know how many they sell of those, but they keep like churning out more kits of them. They're like really nice kits too. They're like nicely detailed. They have a growing range. They started with all like the vehicles you got to do, like the Tigers and Panthers and Shermans and stuff, but like they are expanding it like pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to do North Africa as well. So maybe the I mean, it's also possible that the barrier of entry for starting that has, like, come down over time. So it's easier to do now. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess nobody else is doing 12mm doing plastic. So you can basically, like, corner the market.
Speaking of cool, like, plastic kits, War Games Atlantic have been doing 10mm, you know, like, War Master style kits.
These
are, like, a big sprue of orcs. And so you get like 3 sprues of these guys. It's like 274, I think. Mm-hmm. Dudes in here with bases, and it was like $50.
Yeah, Canadian. I was looking at those.
It's like, dang.
Because I keep thinking I want to build a couple of armies for hordes of the things. And it would be perfect for that. You can just churn out like a bunch of guys, and they look really nice from the photos I saw. So, and
yeah, the good quality.
And in the future, there will be Squad Hammer Fantasy. Squad hammers. Yeah, so, you know, there'll be something to use them on if you don't want to play Hordes of the Things, which you should anyway. But I feel like if you're a Squad Hammer player, you are probably not a guy who only plays one game.
But, I mean, most people can't read Hordes of the Things.
This is true. Yeah.
I bought it. I tried to read it. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, and that the funny thing is it's actually, like, more readable than, like, DBM or DBA. You definitely have to, like, get into the vibe of, like, some run-on sentences. Like, if blades in open terrain and good order within a holy distance from kind of stuff. Like, it's, like, a beautiful example of, like, trying to overwrite things to, like, make them clearer and in the process making it, like, more confusing. My cat is like wanting to get on the table. Do you want to be on camera?
Oh, hey, very cute.
Yes, that's Lancelot.
Oh,
so that he's actually sitting on my printer. I can't print anything because that's where he wants to be.
Oh yes, well, we had so much stuff to print.
I did print a fair amount because I have a laser. This thing has been on like low toner for like the last I don't know. Like a year, and it keeps printing.
It's old enough too that there's no chip in it, right?
Yeah. This one is like old school, so you can use because I bought whatever you call it, like aftermarket They do say in all the like documentation, like you must only use certified HP printers, or a guy will come to your house and kill you.
Yeah, yeah.
But he hasn't found where I live yet. We're fine. The
another day.
Hewlett Packard like death squad. See, now he's just showing off for the camera, or trying to bite me.
Lick bite, yeah.
Yeah, that means he wants something.
Oh, probably some PDFs printed off.
Yeah. Do you want some wargaming? Good Lord, cat. Asshole. But yeah, cat cam, yes. So if I could, I would get the other two in here, but trying to get them all three in one place is basically like a friggin' miracle. And if they are, one of them wanders off like immediately. So Lancelot is usually the one who doesn't like company. But yes, when I'm working, he is sleeping on that printer right next to my desk.
Dang.
Just kind of... yeah, he comes in the morning, he settles in on the printer, and then he just kind of sleeps all day. If I go downstairs, he walks downstairs with me. He comes back up. He follows me, like, everywhere.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's... I feel bad sometimes, because, like, I am kind of forgetful, and I will, like, forget. Like, if I carry a pen around, or my notepad, or my phone, and I go to, like, get a glass of water or something, it will 100% be deposited somewhere in the way. So I'll come back up with my water, and not my iPad or whatever, and I'll come back down, and he will have dutifully like follow me downstairs and back up, and then he will turn around and come right back down once he realizes that. Like, he eats 12 cans of food a day basically, and he is still pretty skinny because he just like runs up the stairs like 8 times every single day.
Awesome. Exercise.
Yeah, it's good. They do say you're supposed to like give your cats lots of exercise, but usually that means like actively playing with them. He doesn't really like to play very much. He just like runs up and down the stairs. So he likes it. There's a laser. Otherwise, he doesn't really. If you get like a mouse or some mouse toy or something, he'll just like look at you like what?
Has to be laser.
Yes. Chase that yourself. I'm not doing it. Oh my god! Well, now he's fighting me, asshole.
It's fight o'clock.
It is a war time.
Let's see, I was gonna talk about my battle tech, I guess.
Yeah, you got some stuff going on.
I'm like, before your phone dies, so fucking
behind. We're on like a third of the battery indicator, so you got a little time.
Ooh, nice.
Talk battle tech.
Yeah, I was also gonna be kind of an experiment to try a belly cam, basically.
Yeah,
so I was gonna do a bit of show and tell.
For me, belly tattoo.
Yeah, before I get into the pictures, moving pictures, I like the spectacle more than anything else. So if it takes me like 10 years to actually play a game, I don't mind so much. As long as everything looks good when I finally get there. Or at least the way I wanted it to look. I mean, the challenge sometimes is that you change your mind halfway through and then you like just restart like a process.
Yeah, as long as you're not changing your mind about like the color scheme, because then... You're like literally back from like square one, right?
Yeah, I've gone through color schemes a couple times.
Everyone has like that box of space marines they've gotten off eBay that have gone through like 7 different color schemes, and they didn't get like stripped before any of them.
Oh yeah.
So you like put them in the simple green or whatever, and like the green paint comes off. And it turns out they were ultramarines before, and then you strip that, and it turns out they were bloody angels at one point.
Yeah. And then you get down to the enamel finally, and you're like, oh, well, end of the line.
Yeah. Like, I guess they really are dark angels forever, because that shit ain't coming off.
I'm right, glad so that you're getting abused by Lancelot there.
Yeah, he is. Now
bam. All right, I'm out.
He made his point.
Yeah. But I basically, I mean, thing for me that helped kind of solidify my project is Battletech Alpha Strike is the game I like the most. I like regular Battletech too, but Battletech Alpha Strike, and then they made the Battletech Aces solo, the beta. Mm. So then I had solo rules, so now I can play it at home, having everything look the way I want it to look. And then they released the Hinterlands campaign book, which has a lot of rules for building a Alpha Strike campaign. With points and war chests and things, so it could become like a big production, and that really got the ball rolling for me. So all the pieces now are together, so I just want like this solid concept. That's why it's easy to play 5 parsecs. Everything's there. You know, you roll through the ball like right start to finish, But these ones, you have to, I had to like take some time to put all the pieces together.
Put all, but that's the thing with, especially with BattleTech and Alpha Strike, that it is all these pieces that kind of work. Like you might use only like three different of those pieces and to have whatever like your game happens to be.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So yeah, now I got all the things I want, and you start thinking about the environments. The Hinterlands takes out, it's kind of like near the periphery, but not quite out there. In the place where the Jade Falcons used to be in the Ilkhan era. So now it's kind of like Wild West. So you know, theme-wise, it's like easy to imagine Badlands. Yeah. And I love Badlands because you can do pretty much like anything in Badlands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do fantasy in the Badlands. You can do sci-fi in the Badlands. Yeah. War in the Badlands, whatever. World War II is in the Badlands. It's kind of a great neutral area.
Yeah.
So any kind of like terrain projects that you're building on are pretty applicable to more things than just this battle.
Yeah.
So I've been working on my basing. It's the big first step, and I've been pretty happy with that. I'll flip the camera here, and I will make us all. Am I stomach huge?
Yeah, man.
And let's see. I just got to zoom in.
What's the point of wearing a Misfits shirt if it's not going to be on camera?
Yeah, exactly. Finally, everyone gets to see it. And if you want to sponsor me with t-shirts, just send them on.
Oh, that is a way we can cash in.
Well, it says it's zoomed, but it's definitely.
It's zoomed in the sense that it's exactly the same as it was before.
Oh, I guess that is zoomed as it goes. Okay.
Oh, okay. So you're gonna have to kind of tell like pretty actively.
I'm gonna bring a few things in. I think once you start putting all the pieces together, it'll tie it in. So here's a big old atlas.
Hey. Big boy.
Yeah. So you get like this nice, you know, basing kind of going on. I got, you know, little grass tufts that are way too big, but they don't look too bad, you know, in a sci-fi kind of atmosphere.
I always like the idea of like kind of oversized like plants and stuff for BattleTech. Like compared to like a guy standing next to the mech, they would be like, you know, like person height, but it looks kind of cool. It's like if the war machines are bigger, then like everything is bigger, right?
Yeah, exactly. And alien planets, why not megafauna? Sure.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I got still working on these guys. So my main force is going to be the Banson's Raiders. So they have a nice, you know, kind of contrasting color scheme. But they still will fit nicely with the basing. These guys are Northwind Highlanders. And let's see. Here's some Jade Falcons. So, you know, like when I put them on the tabletop, everything kind of, you know, contrasts and stands out, so they kind of pop against each other, but they still all tie in really nicely because of the basing and, you know, the painting style.
Yeah, I was going to say, since they all have kind of like this almost like dusty look to them, which kind of fits the vibe, it does mean they like feel like they fit together, even though they have completely different like color schemes and stuff.
Yeah, this guy's not done yet, but these ones are pretty fun to do. I'm going to bring this one out for a sec. So this one primed black, then dry brushed with a wraith bone and then up to a white because my eyes are starting to get older. So it's a little bit harder to see all the details. And there's actually a pretty good amount of details on these plastics.
Yeah, but those plastics are really good, especially if you're like old enough to remember like what Baltic plastics used to look like.
Quite awful. Yes.
Yeah, like they are really short. I also love how many like large mechs they have started doing now. Because there is something like really satisfying, like a big
chunky
like
boys.
Like big assault mech or whatever they call them.
Yeah,
they just like.
But they also do really good tiny mechs now too, which I feel like they didn't do as much of before.
Yeah, they like, always ran
this locust here.
Because they always ran into the issue of like weapons and some of the parts being like really spindly. Yeah. So.
Or even scaling, like a giant mech like an Atlas versus like a tiny mech like a Locust. The size difference wasn't that much. But now I think they really stand out against each other quite well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it really puts into perspective like which one is the scout mech and stuff. This is also a good time to like do a little like PSA especially if you're building, whether you're building an army and your friend is building an army or you're building two armies together, like make sure to do the bases the same way.
Oh, yes.
Or at least, like, reasonably the same way.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't have to do the exact same, like, brand of flock or whatever. But if you're doing grass and he's doing, like, volcanic rocks, it's going to look a little shit.
He's on the alien purple world and you're on the lush green forest. Yeah.
And the two apparently meet like right here.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, then I got some. These are all like the GHQ kind of style military stuff, which I think will fill up the tables nicely for the Badlands kind of aspects, but you know, they don't really hide the mechs. I mean, like even the Atlas can kind of see over this.
Oh yeah, he definitely peeks over. You may need to get some like triple story.
Yeah.
But that's also one of those things that sometimes don't come out when playing on like on the hex maps. Like they're supposed to be a disadvantage to like those super big mechs and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So little guys can hide while the big ones stand up. But now I got these are the Hextech buildings. So I bought one, like they're super expensive, but I wanted to have one reference so that when I get like the 3D printed stuff like this, then I get to kind of use the same colors so I can color reference this guy. They don't match with this kind of 3D printed stuff, which is a lot cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's so much, even if you don't have a printer yourself, there's so much stuff out there like on Etsy and eBay and stuff where you can just like find some dude who's like printing shit in his garage and have him, you know, churn out a bunch of stuff for you. And without being like real expensive.
And then so all the colors kind of start tying together nicely too. Which is good. These guys don't really match. I don't think.
Well, I was just thinking, because that gives you the chance of like, you can do like desert style buildings on like one end of the table and then like the industrial ones on the other side or, you know, stuff like that. Or you have the freedom to use one style of buildings, one game, and a different style in the next. So it all kind of.
Yeah. And also bought some of the roads too. So
nice.
These ones match nicely.
Yeah. They look badass.
Yeah. So I think, you know, and then as long as you have a mat that is halfway decent. You could buy like a neoprene one or even just put a tablecloth down that's a pretty good color, like a sandy color.
Yeah.
But
like beige like tablecloth or a bedsheet or something.
Yeah. But I have bought like toolbox liner. Also lays very flat. It's it's meant to lie flat. It's not meant to curl up when your tools are in there.
Oh. Okay.
So if you could take those and you can spray paint them so you can change the coloring. So that's a pretty cheap and easy way to do, your base, and then you have all your stuff built up on top of it.
I wonder if you could get, because I noticed sometimes they have this like texture paint, which kind of looks like, I think it's intended for like fake granite, like on furniture. Like,
oh yeah.
So you could possibly take a mat or something and like spray it with that stuff that might look like super awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I did do that with one of them, actually. And texture paint's nice that way. Yeah, because you can just like that spray and it just sprays right on. You can do it lightly, so it just adds like a little bit of texture, but not too much, so it won't interfere when you put stuff down.
Oh, yeah. You don't want it to get grungy.
Yeah. I guess the only downside for this is that he's walking on Badlands and now he's on a road.
But. Yeah, there's no way of like avoiding that. The only way is those like clear like acrylic bases people sometimes do, but they always look kind of weird because it ends up like hovering like and
I bought some clear acrylics too a long time ago because I thought that's the way I wanted to do it, but in the end you get scratched up and dusty and they just don't get clear after a while.
Or if you fuck it up and you get like fog from super glue on them. It's like models with flight bases on. Like, there's just no way of making them look good.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
You know,
it's doomed.
Yeah, it's just.
Well, the Battlefront ones usually come with bubbles in the stem as well. So that looks real great. I think these like super cheap little trees because I think they're pretty good BattleTech scale.
Oh yeah,
get them based up next. They're super cheap. These ones. Yeah, so nothing amazing, but. People
always forget that like trees get really fucking tall.
Yeah. Trees are huge.
It's funny when you buy like 28 millimeter trees and they are basically like bushes, like in real size. Right.
Yeah.
A long time ago, I have like one box of trees that I got super cheap from some Chinese seller and I just use them for everything, regardless of scale. Like, fuck it. They are never in scale anyway. So these are just my model trees.
Yeah. And depending where you are too, you know, like some trees are bigger in some parts of the world than others.
Yeah, it's actually a fun exercise. I don't think people have to be like super scale nerds, but it's useful like once in your life just like set up what a realistic scale table would look like. So figure out, like, if I'm playing in 28 millimeter and, you know, like one guy is 6 feet tall, right?
Yeah.
Go measure like the road outside your house and see how wide is a road actually, like in figure scale. How tall is a house? Like, if a pistol could shoot 50 yards, how far is 50 yards? Like, down the road? Like, it's really quite cool to do. Just to get an idea of, like, what things really ought to look like.
Oh, yeah. Or, like, I remember, like, Night of the Living Dead, right? They're, like, trying to fill up the... I think they're trying to fill up their truck at a gas station. The zombies are coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, you don't realize until that moment how long things actually take. It's like, zombies aren't going very fast, but you still can't do it fast enough.
I have read somewhere, and I've never timed this, that when you watch Aliens, when there's, like, the countdown towards the end, that countdown is actually accurate. If you... time it like from when it starts and until the whole thing explodes. But I've never like tested it with like stopwatch. Well, really cool. Yeah, because you always get in movies where it's like there's 30 seconds till the bomb goes off and there's 15 minutes left of the movie. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
It gets slowed down a little bit.
I guess just to wrap up the project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these guys, so I took the dry brushing and I've started adding the paints to them. And the paints are all like slightly translucent, of course. Most paints are, unless you get like super opaque paints, which will add a lot of depth. And then you just paint over the panels and you leave the dark parts inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been going through them afterwards with a fountain pen filled with the Tamiya panel liner.
Oh, okay.
And just reinforcing all the panel lines. So
they kind of get like a double, because you leave the black like in the gaps to begin with, and then you kind of go back and like double up on it essentially.
Yeah. And these guys have no highlighting. There's no highlighting in them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all just, you know, from the dry brushing and then the not quite opaque paints.
Yeah.
The panel lining depth to it, which is really nice.
Yeah. It really makes them pop. It makes them look way more like three dimensional.
Yeah. But also kind of cartoony, which is I was trying to go for. I want a little bit of a cartoony look to my project.
Yeah, especially for Battletech, like, you know, just make them look a little goofy. Or not goofy, but it's just like, makes them look vivid. Like, the artwork often has that, like, quality to it.
Yeah. Like, I tried a bunch of different styles. Like, this tank here, I don't know if we can see all that well, is contrast paints. So it's just...
Okay.
I think these ones were, like, straight up, like, you know, like a off-white color with the contrast put on top. And, like, maybe a little dry brush afterwards. And they do pop really nicely, but when you get something big like this, it just kind of like fades off.
Yeah. There's kind of a fine balance for contrast, especially with some of those large figures with like big flat plates on them.
Yeah. But it is really nice and quick doing it this way, because you just put the one contrast on, then you put the darker one in like break pattern lines, and then you got a cool
basically done.
Tank.
Are you gonna try to do any of the tanks with camo?
Yeah, just like this. So this one just has like the green pattern there.
Oh,
I'll just leave it as that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the more camo you put on, the less it looks like a miniature and the more it looks like camouflaged.
I've always seen the tip that you basically have to paint camouflage so that it's like way too large compared to what it would really be. Because otherwise it'll either make your mini blend in or it'll just look like a weird muddled like mess. So, like, if you're painting, like, camouflage on, like, a dude's trousers or something, just paint, like, two or three big splotches, even though, realistically, you would have, you know, like, a billion, like, little dots and things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's why the chip camo, I think, like, works really well. Mm.
Yeah.
Because it has, like, a lot of nice contrast to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it keeps, like, the details popped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you have to make it kind of look... And that's the general thing for, like, small figures, too. You kind of want to, like, exaggerate, like, more bold colors than you might normally do for a larger figure and stuff like that. Because otherwise, it's so easy for it to just become, like, a muddled mess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think to wrap up my project, painting-wise, so I got... Because I want to have, like, a few varieties for enemies. You know, it's kind of like, you think about your 5 Parsecs project, you want to have, like, certain groups of dudes that can represent certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And in Battletech, you have like a lot of mechs that kind of be shared throughout different factions. So the one like, you know, generic camouflage pattern for like very common mechs makes it very versatile to build like no matter who you're fighting, they could be represented by these mechs. But also, it's nice to kind of have like a main enemy sort of things, like a clan Jade Falcon. Makes for a very good focal point. So,
yeah.
You know, when you're fighting the Jade Falcons, it's kind of special because they have their own color scheme.
Yeah. Well, and especially with Battletech, because like, I know you can do the thing where it's like, okay, this unit specifically uses these mechs between 3025 and 3029. But like, a lot of times you're just kind of like buying mechs you like, and then you're choosing like which army they are or which like mercenary unit or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So having them like, but it's also a way you can kind of like build your own like identity for them, because like you're picking specific mechs for your Jade Falcons. So, you know, when you play with these guys, the Jade Falcons will have like this particular style because you picked a bunch of mechs that have like certain weapons. Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can kind of like create them like to be distinct or give them character.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most important thing for when you start like a wargaming is to really go with an aesthetic, I think, more than anything else. Like, yeah. The people, you know, sometimes rule of cool is all you have because you don't know the rules well enough.
Yeah, and sometimes the rules change anyway.
Yeah, nothing's going to be, especially Warhammer, nothing will be constant. The things you buy now, you might not be able to play with later anyway, so you might as well have liked them.
Yeah, go with the vibes.
Yeah, which is why I think when we're talking earlier about the lack of conversions in 40K, I think it's because people just don't really have the time and energy to put into that kind of project and knowing that it's very finite.
Yeah. Plus, you also get a lot of people who are like, because you'll see all the time, like a new codex comes out or a new edition or something. People are like, now it turns out that like Necrons are 3% stronger. So people like eBay their armies and buy new ones. So they're kind of not putting like that much effort into them.
Yeah. The more you make them look unique, the less they sell. So.
Yeah. You want to have them, like, if you have your, like, Hello Kitty Necron army, that's going to be a little difficult to sell for somebody who just wants, like, a tournament army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of a, but, you know, then you have the weirdos on the internet, like the Inquisitor 28 guys and stuff like that, that are kind of holding up the opposite end of that.
Yeah, but they also have stable rules, so that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Things aren't really changing there, I don't think. I mean, I've never actually read it, so I'm just making assumptions.
But. Yeah, it's honestly, I mean, it's just Inquisitor, but like most of those dudes don't play games anyway. They're just like building and converting stuff to like look and post and talk about, which is fine. Like that's its own hobby. You know, it's like the old Hammer guys. Like in theory, their games don't change, but they aren't really like throwing down a lot of games, you know?
Yeah, like, three times a year sort of thing.
Yeah. The rest of it is just like eBaying for Space Marine, painting up, trying to find like that one original land speeder, you know, stuff like that.
Ooh, it's a hard one to get.
Yeah, they are not real common.
I've never seen it out in the wild.
I have seen one, and that was at a tournament, and it was a guy who very obviously like has kept the same army basically like three editions in a row at that time. But that's the only time I've ever seen. I've never even seen one show up on eBay.
Yeah, exactly. It's so hard to get. I got like the second run of the metal. It's like a giant chunk of metal. It's just on a flight
stand. Yeah, I remember that one where it had like the raised like armored front to it.
Yeah, like it's really cool. It's like a Corvette of
blast. Yeah, speeders. I remember that's the one that was around when I started. But I remember like seeing in the rule book, it was like the original one, which does like a couch.
Yeah,
with
exactly. A prong.
Yeah, which I'm sure is not like a militarily savvy vehicle, but it looked cool.
Well, it's like the baby Bjorn Warwalker from the Eldar. You just sitting there on a seat right in front of everything.
Yes. All right. My phone is definitely coming down to its time limit, but we also managed to keep going for like an hour and 15 minutes. So
yeah. Thanks everyone who chatted.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. We don't necessarily read out everything, but we I glance at it at least. And yeah, so we'll wrap things up. Next show will be
a couple of weeks.
25th, I think.
Yeah, and the topic will be even more exciting. Sometimes we're pretty well prepared. This was not one of those. So, but we kind of go, we have like episodes where it's like very free ranging and we just kind of shooting the breeze. We have episodes where it's more focused and it's like a very specific topic we talk about. Sometimes we even have a guest. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Zeron's a great show. So that is what I like about a loyal customer. They're willing to lie and say it was good.
That's right. Keep it coming. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. Take care.
Peace.
Peace. Hearts.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month, and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.